Hello?
Hey.
Is it working?
I think so.
Oh, sick. Well, hey everyone. Welcome to Evening Conversations with Grant Henry. I'm your host, Grant Henry. I'm really excited to record this podcast tonight. I'm currently in a professional ethics and counseling class where I have to create a project of my own identity. So, to interview me, I've asked my beautiful wife, Frankie, who is sitting right beside me, to ask me all the questions. I figured she knows me best. So, why not ask the woman I love to ask me about, well, me?
Your favorite.
Literally my favorite thing.
Number one.
It was like Christmas, but with more me. Name that movie, Frankie.
I can't.
It's crazy. It was Marvel's Avengers with Robert Downey Jr. And you say you know me. All right, well, Frankie, you have a list of questions that you're going to interview me tonight, and I'm really looking forward to this. I hope that you are too.
Makes one of us.
Okay. Ooh, let's go ahead.
Right, well, we'll just dive in again. Feels like the newlywed game, but one-sided. But I guess we'll do your favorite thing. And so, why don't you just tell me about yourself? Who are you, Grant?
Who am I? Such a loaded first question, but thank you for asking. I think I am a lot of things. I'm a son, a brother, a best friend. I am a mentor to some. I am a mentee to others. I am, ooh, I'm a husband.
Should have been number one, but keep going.
I think one of my other favorite things about me is that I'm very much like an armchair historian. I can't really go anywhere without thinking about like the historical events that may have taken place there. You know this from like our bike rides across Gettysburg or like trips to Harper's Ferry or like even going down to DC and being like, oh, like, do you know why this is here?
Usually don't, but you're my walking tour guide, so.
That's right. And you're getting it all for free. So nice.
All for free. Well, I think you also forgot soprano loving, pizza enthusiast, and you're kind of funny.
Oh, where's the gabagool?
I take
Okay.
it
Fair.
back. So I guess from all that reflection of who you are, what would you say is a story from your life that shaped your views into the man you are today?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I've been thinking a lot about this question over the last couple of days, and I think the thing that continues to come at me is, are you familiar with Nanny Camp? Did you
Nanny
have Nanny
Camp.
Camp whenever you were little?
I did not, but I do know of Nanny Camp.
Yeah, so Nanny Camp, when I was a little kid, probably in primary, elementary, even middle school, I would spend summers, weeks at a time, in Western PA on my grandma's farm. And there I learned a lot about family, I learned a lot about hard work. I would go off and like stain decks. I would bale hay. I would like pasture fields. But I was always surrounded by nature, which is something that I really love. I was surrounded by family, which obviously I love. I was surrounded by this idea that hard work pays off because at the end of the day, if you're chopping firewood and it's July and you're chopping it for like September or October, that you see this product of your work. And so that exposure to like this kind of rural blue collar America was the thing that was a catalyst for me. But then I also think there's a transformative 4-year experience when I went off to college. I was exposed to a lot of different things. I went to New York for the first time, saw my first show on Broadway. Started listening to a lot of different music, like 70s, 80s rock and roll, 50s and 40s jazz, Duke Ellington for one. And so all of those things led me to believe that really anybody can be whatever they want to be as long as they are passionate about it. And that made me think, if I'm passionate about what other people are passionate about, then I can be a cheerleader for them. And for me, even in this role in undergraduate admission, I really feel a sense of being a cheerleader and advocate for students. So how did that go? Did I answer that question?
Yeah, I think you nailed it right on the head. You are definitely a walking cheerleader for everyone that comes in contact with you.
Go team go.
Go team go. So kind of with that reflection from nanny camp to college really shaping, you know, the views that you have now, what do you ethically stand for then?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to like the second answer to that question, but it was kind of being that advocate for people, whether they are my best friends, whether they're my coworkers, whether they're my wife or my family. Being an advocate means going and drawing that line in the sand to say that this is where my limit is. This is where the boundaries are, whether they be professional or personal boundaries, and making sure that you do everything that you can in your power to assist people through this, no matter what it is that they're doing. I talk to students who are discerning on what academic major they want to do, or talking to my colleagues about their frustrations about projects they're working on, or celebrating a job well done through another area, project area that they might be working on. So ethically, I believe in being an advocate for students, but also I firmly believe that ethics are here to draw the line in the sand to make sure that we're all working towards this without overextending ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, on top of that, where do your decisions really come from then? What is it about yourself that influences the decisions you make overall?
Yeah, I didn't really think about this until I did my ethical lens inventory this past semester. And the ethical lens inventory, or the ELI, shout out ELI, told me that my area of where my decisions come from is called reputation. And really that my decisions come from what my reputation is. I am a lead by example kind of person. I am a person who shows up, does a good job, but also makes sure that everyone knows that they are also doing the good jobs, and making sure that my reputation is something that people want to follow. But my decisions are really based on the thoughts and opinions of others. And I tend to make those decisions with my gut and not in my heart and not with my mind, not really thinking logically.
Yeah. So, you know, with your career, you know, where do you stand regarding the rights of the students you will soon serve or are currently serving?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always important for me to set aside time to reflect and discern on what I need to grow and learn as a person, right? In my current role, we go through these large spells of 2 months or 3 months where it's all hands on deck, full speed, not literally run through a wall. And see you on the other side. But on that other side, I think it's also really important for us to really sit back and reflect and learn on what are things that go well, what are things that we can improve on, and where do we go from here? Everyone's always like, oh, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But there are so many things that we need to think about and take the time to think about before we even try to answer those questions.
Deep.
Thanks.
So what does ethical leadership and ethical behavior mean to you?
It's a, for me, it's...
I know, big question.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, ethical leadership is all about caring for the whole person, right? And leading, and again, leading by example. But that idea that for the students, we are not just there to get them in, get them out, making sure that nothing happens to them over the course of their 4 years. But we should take time to get to know those students. Take the time to figure out, do they want to be financiers or are their parents financiers? Are their parents lawyers? Are their parents doctors? And why are they passionate about the things that they want to do? And if we take the time to build up the whole person over the course of that 4 years, we're going to graduate students who are ready to take on the next generation of issues. They're also going to be leaders who are also concerned about the whole person. So the people that they meet on the street, in the classroom, you know, whether if they're military, at boot camp, if they're doing service, right, working with underprivileged areas, they're focused on the whole person. And I think that's what we have to work towards.
Continue to be a cheerleader.
Continue to be a cheerleader so that we graduate other cheerleaders so that I can retire, you know?
Not yet. So then what are important leadership qualities, and what experiences assisted or will assist you in gaining these?
Yeah, so I was looking forward to this question because...
Well, you wrote it, so...
Thank you. There was a book by Mary Kearns Goodwin, who... Do you know the movie by Daniel Day-Lewis, Lincoln?
I've heard of it.
Okay. She wrote the book, Team of Rivals. But she also wrote this book called Leadership in Turbulent Times. I read it over the pandemic because it highlights people like President Lyndon Baines Johnson, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President Theodore Roosevelt, and President George Bush. Okay, George W. And these are four leaders who, in the term of their presidency, so it could have been 4 years, 8 years, or in FDR's case, 12 years, that they, there's the armchair historian coming out at you.
I felt it.
That we are all faced with our own challenges. For, on the lightest note, it could be somebody who is a night person who has to wake up at 6 a.m. to get to work and put on that sunshining face and be that person, be that cheerleader. But it could also be somebody who is dealing with their own mental health issues. It could also be somebody who is dealing with family relationships or conflicts. And it's all about kind of setting the bar for yourself and becoming the measuring stick to which all others are measured. And we do that in our own time, just like those four presidents did in theirs.
You learn something new every day.
You should really check it out. It was really great.
Yeah. So what are your feelings on tough ethical issues like abortion, drugs, violence, working with parents or guardians, etc.?
Yeah. See, I think I set this up as a trick question for myself, but really it is a, whatever my stances are on those issues, and I do have them, I am a registered Democrat who is fiercely pro-choice. I am a person who believes in a woman's right to choose. I believe that science is real. I believe that Black Lives Matter. I believe that every person is unique and special in their own way. And that we have to take care of these things. Oh, I also believe that news is real. Okay, there's no fake news except for, you know, which way. I won't say it here on the podcast. But when we're working with students, when we're working with parents, when we're helping to shape the next generation, we need to keep our biases out of it. We need to make sure that students are making these decisions based off of all of the real factual information and support that we can give them. And allow them to choose what they believe and what they feel. Because the moment that we try to prophesize, the moment that we try to sit up on our soapbox and talk about all of the things that are wrong with the world and try to solve the world's problems in 5 minutes or 20 minutes in the session, we've lost that student. Because that student might think differently than we do. And we lose our credibility. So it's important for us to stay true to what we believe, but also making sure that students feel like they can come to us in a safe environment, no matter what our beliefs are.
So allowing the student or person to feel heard.
Feel heard.
Yeah. Listen to understand. Listen to the best that we can.
Listen to understand. Do not listen to respond.
There you go.
There you go. Podcast rule number one.
So my last question for you is, how do you consider cultural or social awareness as a future professional school counselor?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is that what I have to grapple with is that I am a white, cisgendered, heterosexual male. And that comes with privilege. I have the privilege of being able to travel on my own. I have the privilege of sitting in a coffee shop alone and not feel a sense of endangerment or what have you. And that I also need to recognize that there are students who are sitting here in my room, in my classroom, in my office, who don't have food security, shelter security. There are students who are coming here who English might not even be their primary first language. I also need to make sure that my office is accessible, because there may be people who don't have the actual physical accessibility to sit comfortably in my office. And by me recognizing where those students are coming from, whether that be socially or culturally, I have to understand that even my talk on care for the whole person is a Jesuit value. And if I go too far into St. Ignatius and his teachings, that might be culturally insensitive to a student who is sitting in my classroom who has never heard of Catholicism. So ultimately, those are the sort of things that we need to keep in mind. And I think I'm ready for it.
I think you're ready too.
Well, thanks. I still have like 2 years to go in this program.
Yeah, like a year and a half.
Pending a good grade by Dr. Cicero.
Yep. A.
A. Awesome. Is that all the questions that you have for me?
It's all the ones you gave me.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, everyone, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. And I really appreciate you listening to this episode of Evening Conversations. Frankie, thanks for doing the interview.
Thanks for asking me, and thanks for allowing me to enter inside your classroom via podcast.
Was it asking, or did I force you to do this because you said that you would help me with anything for grad school?
Yes, asking.
Awesome. Thank you all so much. Stay safe, and good night.
Adios.